is Tidings from Hazel Khan. My guest today is Professor Ray Oldenburg, an urban sociologist and professor emeritus at the Department of Sociology and Anthropology at the University of West Florida in Pensacola. He's perhaps best known for his wonderful book, The Great Good Place: Cafes, coffee shops, community centers, beauty parlors, general stores, bars, and hangouts. Professor Oldenburg's book has been on my shelves for years, and I've referred to it many times in discussions about what is missing in our culture and how our neighborhoods could become perhaps much more cohesive places. Professor Oldenburg, it's a pleasure to welcome you to Tidings.
My pleasure.
If I may begin with the words with which you begin your book. Currently, and for some time now, the course of urban growth and development in the United States has been hostile to an informal public life. We are failing to provide either suitable or sufficient gathering places necessary for it. The grassroots of our democracy are correspondingly weaker than in the past, and our individual lives are not as rich. Thus, it is always with a sense of urgency that I write and speak on this subject.
So what is a great good place, or as you also refer to it, the third place? Why are they important? What roles do they play? What functions do they serve? Just talk to us about that.
Well, as John Dewey said a long time ago, democracy depends to a large extent upon people getting together at their street corners, talking about this and that. And so local roots are extremely important. Now, my list of functions for third places, by the way, that third place is a very simple idea, based on the idea that the first and most important place is the home. The second place is the workplace, unless you're a student, then at school. But the third place is quite different from the other two, because the first place and the second place impose certain constraints and demands. And the third place represents freedom of all of that. You get together with your friends and you relax and enjoy their company. And of course, since World War II, as I said at a conference the other day, what a wonderful society this would be if we had known how to build cities after World War II, because we're at a point now where 90% of the built environment has been built since World War II, and basically it's been built all wrong. The fundamental premise is single-use zoning, which means that you can't have gathering places where we live. You can't get the necessities of daily life within walking distance, as our friend from Norway always says when she visits, "My God, you people have to get in the car for everything." So it's really bad urban design, and it deprives us of the easy access to our neighbors. And so, you know, the subdivision, we are the first and only suburban nation in the world, and the subdivisions in which we live are so highly privatized. As has long since been noticed, we avoid spontaneous interaction with our socialization with our neighbors because we have to protect the privacy of the home. And anyway, the fact that I moved into one of these places upon coming to Pensacola really is, that's where the book came from. I used to sit out front and wonder why, looking at the always empty streets, how we came to this and the cost. The third place is simply a fairly easily accessible and fairly inexpensive gathering place. Two things are necessary. Number one, that it has a cast of regulars who meet there very often. And secondly, that conversation is the main activity. Very simple, really, but not easy to achieve in the United States these days.
Does it have to be indoors? I mean, not, you know, or are they usually indoors? I mean, people might say, you know, Central Park is a gathering, is a third place.
Oh, sure. No, it doesn't have to be indoors, depending. You know, of course, I was privileged to live in the south of France for a couple of years, and now I live in Florida. And now, in the south of France, the main gathering places were outdoors, sidewalk cafes, and of course, they would even put heaters out there or enclose them in glass or whatever, because the preference for being on the street was so strong. Now here, in the hot months, it's very difficult to do that. So we're more inside, indoors.
Do you have a third place right now in your life?
Yeah, but it has to be scheduled. Which, you know, if it were within walking distance and I could go there any time, which is the ideal situation, then I wouldn't have to schedule it. But to meet my friends, we have to agree on a place and a time and so on.
Ray, what are the roles played by third places? What functions do they serve, and how does their absence harm a community or even a culture, perhaps?
First of all, where you have them, they unify the neighborhood. Years ago, a mom and pop would open up in a neighborhood, and 80% of the trade came from within a two-block radius. And within that two-block radius, almost everybody knew everybody else. So that's important. Then they tend to sort people out by interest. You go to your favorite haunt, and you find other people who are musicians, or they're hooked on dogs, or they like to go to the shooting range, or whatever. Third places also secure the area. They're eyes on the street, as Jane Jacobs would have called it. They are ports of entry. You know, you move into a new neighborhood, and if there is a third place, you get to know people very quickly, and you know where to go for what and who you can count on for what. Also, they give you friends in quantity, what some people call the weak ties that we have, which turn out to be more important when you're looking for a job. Weak ties, for example, are more useful than your close friend.
Give me an example of that.
Well, this has to do with the work of Mark Granovetter at Harvard years ago. He looked at this question of, how do you find a job when you don't have a job? And he discovered there that your family, your real close friends, aren't very useful in that. But the people that you know incidentally are far more useful. They expand your world more. The third place is, as I like to say, a spiritual tonic. And you know, we have these joie de vivre or la dolce vita cultures, and their chief characteristic is that they have these places, and these places are visited all the time. Third places lend social support. I noticed in my studies that people who are regulars at third places, if one of the group doesn't show up for 2 days, somebody will call, somebody will go over, somebody will check. See if everything is all right. They are an intellectual form of sorts. Now, we tend to define intellectualism in fairly lofty and bookish terms, but a lot of ideas are kicked around in third places, and to that extent, they are an intellectual forum. Third places lower the cost of living because people will loan you things, help you, and not everything is on a fee-for-service basis, as it tends to be when you're isolated. They contribute to social capital, which has become a big thing since the term has become popularized.
Could you explain social?
What is social capital? Okay, when I first came across it in some southern states, which were either wet or dry, and in the wet states where taverns were allowed, people's circle of friends and acquaintances were larger and more trust developed, and lo and behold, they were better off economically than in the dry county. So that's the key of social capital. If people get together, learn to trust one another, it's good for the development of the area. Third place is Ease Retirement. Retirement is a lot of people go to retirement centers because they are so isolated in subdivisions that once they retire from the work situation, they lose most of their contacts and find the subdivision intolerable. They promote civility. This is something that's come up recently at a conference I was at. Do third places do anything for civility? Because we have a crisis in civility in this society right now. People listen to so many hate mongers on the media, and they take a stand on one side or another, and there's a lot of nastiness. What third places do, and this is my criticism of so-called electronic community, when you engage in to the extent that you engage people in electronically, what you do is you confine yourself to people who think like you do. And the advantage of a third place is it is a place where people with different viewpoints come together. And what you learn there is that the ties that you cultivate are really more important than your prejudices. And you learn to be quite civil in these places in terms of the latest events. But there's such a variety of conversation that goes on that I certainly wouldn't think of them as political forums. No, not at all.
So do the friendships, I mean, you call them weak ties, that they're weak relatively to, say, friend or family or workplaces. But do people also continue the friendship outside the third place? Is that usual? Or
No, that in terms of the number of people you meet in a third place, one or two may become friends. You may invite them into your home or whatever, but that's unusual. That's unusual. But it's important to find real close friends that way when it happens. But most of the people there are they're not your close friends. And your close friends, by definition, are people that you want to spend time with, that you're very easy with. But those other friends are important too. They become characters in their own right. One of the things that I think is really missing from everyday life is we hardly know characters anymore. To know characters is to spend a lot of time with a variety of people and to slowly discover how strange, how unique they are. Modern life discourages knowing people that way. Basically, though, if you spend enough idle time with people, you will discover that they are truly unique, that there's nobody else like them, and they become important for that reason. I think to know characters nowadays, you have to read them about them in biographies and autobiographies and so on, because really modern life does not encourage knowing people in that depth.
And modern living arrangements have made people so much more homogeneous anyway. So maybe that's also part of it, that people have just become more homogeneous.
They do to one another, yes. But, each individual has aspects that are not readily available to you unless you do spend an awful lot of time with them.
I mean, you said also it's a place to not to meet a single friend, but a set. And also you talked about bringing generations together.
Yeah. When I'm asked about the best we ever had in terms of third places, I usually say the soda fountain, because it was the most inclusive. And I always think of Robert Frost, what's the ugliest word in the English language? He would pretend to struggle with the question, and all the while he was going to say exclusive. That's the ugliest word in the English language, exclusive. And so the best third places are the most inclusive ones. All ages, sexes, and so on, we're welcome at the soda fountain. I couldn't believe it when a cheap little cinder block building that put out Dairy Queens that replaced that great institution of the soda. I just couldn't believe that, but it happened, of course.
But did it, and it didn't retain any of the character of the soda fountain?
Oh, no, there was no interior. You went up to a little window and you got your stuff and you went on your way, yeah.
You're listening to Professor Ray Oldenburg talking about his classic book, The Great Good Place: Cafes, coffee shops, community centers, beauty parlors, general stores, bars, and hangouts.
You also talk about that a third place makes really no demands on you. You can come and go as you please. You don't have to arrange anything beforehand, and which I guess is not true of your own third place right now where you live.
You see, you have a wonderful relationship with the place itself. You pay them for whatever you consume there. They are not obliged to entertain you beyond that, and you come and go as you please. You can leave at any time, say goodbye to your friends. It's as easy as it gets if you have the place, and if you don't have the place, you live a fairly isolated existence.
And yet at the same time, you also sort of feel the place is yours. You have a feeling of ownership almost of it. It's your hangout.
Oh, sure. You know, when I studied, when I did a lot of field work in this, and particularly I studied taverns because where I was, there were so many of them, and it was the most obvious kind of place. And I discovered that the regulars typically came in through the back door. This was when we were smarter and we had alleys and you could park in the alley. The regulars came in through the back door and they had their special seats and so on and so forth. They could use the house phone. They could even sometimes walk behind the bar. They had these rights and privileges that are not normally extended to a customer.
So that gives them status as well, I suppose, within the gangs, within the crowd. But you also somewhere, you know, you talked about that we're sort of like, we're not like free-range chickens. We're not free rangers. Do you remember that you wrote that in your book somewhere? That we're sort of cooped up in our suburbs and in our cars and...
Well, yeah, and unfortunately, the corporations have had exerted far too much control over our lives. They alone can afford the leases where we shop. Now they couldn't. You couldn't have a McDonald's or a whatever on a to serve four blocks of people. The income wouldn't be there. But a mom-and-pop store could do that. And when a mom-and-pop store was there, the money stayed in the community. Now, when you're dealing with corporations, those things siphon money out of a community, and they go to some remote place where the profits mount. So when you live in a subdivision, you have these collector roads that herd you out to the shopping centers and the malls. Americans spend roughly four times as much in shopping centers as do Western Europeans. And one of the reasons for that is we don't have the alternative. Public life used to depend largely on independent commercial places. That also contributed to the culture of those areas. And now we have this, what one writer called it, the great landing.
Well, you said they're actually hostile habitats, some of these housing developments. The absence of a third place makes them into hostile habitats that are not really healthy for human habitation. You said, talk a little bit more about what that means and what the negative fallout of this is.
One writer years ago said that there's nothing so desolate as a suburban sidewalk on a Sunday afternoon. I began to wonder why he limited to the Sunday afternoon. That is the normal situation. A lot of our subdivisions don't even have sidewalks because nobody walks. There's nothing to walk to. Now, beyond that, We have privacy fences, and we have electronic garage doors. We can enter into our house, never meet a neighbor from whom we have protection via these fences and the electronic garage door, and so we are isolated. There's an architect by the name of Raymond Curran, C-U-R-R-A-N, talked about this. Says we now live in what he called the open order, characterized by a high mobility, personal privacy, and protection from any kind of communal arrangement. So we're isolated. As another writer says, John Freeh's excellent book, Counterfeit Community, points out that corporations really hate real community. Real community tends to breed satisfied people, and satisfied people don't make for great consumership. No, they don't need to.
They don't go shopping.
Saddest thing I see, and I can't do it anymore, I literally can't do this, is to go to a shopping mall on a Sunday afternoon. There are zombies wandering around looking for something to buy, perhaps, that might make their day or their week. There's no laughter. The faces aren't happy. And yet they're there. The parking lots around the malls are quite full on Sunday afternoon, for lack of anything better.
You talk about counterfeit community or something, which made me think that I wanted to ask you about the fact that the internet, that the internet is supposed to be a model, a parallel model. The language that's used, chat rooms and community and links and tribes and websites and so on. This a lot of those words give the feeling of togetherness and connection and so on.
Well, it's an amazing leap when you basically argue that all there is to community is communication. I think you've made a leap that is not wise. There is so much more in face-to-face contact, and electronic communication gives you some contact with people. It also gives you protection from people. As one lady recently remarked, to leave the house is to risk being offended. So why leave the house when you can sit in a comfortable chair and stare at a screen and pretend you have community? It just doesn't work in my book.
Third places are universal, aren't they? I mean, because the need for them is universal. What about in other countries? I'm thinking of the souk or the bazaar in the Middle East. Have they suffered as much from the diminishing of third places?
They haven't built their society as rapidly as we have with under such ridiculous conditions as Euclidean or so-called single-use zoning. It's the worst idea in the world, but even our city officials at first thought, gee, it's very rational. Why not do it? Because the car can connect everything to everything else. Well, here we are in a car culture. As one writer said, look, now we have both husband and wife working. They each have a car. Over the span of years, they will spend $400,000 on those cars, purchasing them, running them, maintaining them, and at the end, they'll have two old cars.
And two old people who spend half their lives isolated from each other in cars.
Yes.
Which actually brings me pretty much to my last question. But before that, I just wanted to say that bicycle shops are, in fact, quite good third places, can be, can't they?
Oh, yeah.
I have some friends in Berlin, and they have a bicycle shop. And the pavement outside their shop is an absolute gathering place. People just bring chairs, and they sit outside there because there's not enough room in the shop itself, but they're all bicyclists.
Well, we have friends here who regularly meet 7 days a week, 7 a.m., at a convenience store, and there's no place to sit down. These guys meet for an hour. They have coffee out of the machine. They're perfectly content with that.
So I guess these are, you know, the need for a third place adapts to what modern life can offer it, I suppose.
Of course, some things have happened. Libraries have glommed onto the idea big time. And so that there is an institution that completely changing. You know, it used to be a very super quiet book lending institution. Now they're converting it into gathering places. Churches are doing that. YMCAs are doing that, responding to the need for people to get together since the traditional places have been basically outlawed.
Before we talked, I had a more rigid idea of what a third place was. And I thought if it's something like, you know, the High Line in Manhattan or on West Street, a Hudson River Greenway in Manhattan, I don't know if you're familiar with those places. I mean, they're basically outdoor places where there's bicycling and trails and maybe people play tennis and there's benches. And I thought that doesn't really qualify for a third place because it's too dynamic. It doesn't sit still long enough for people to really gather. But I don't know if that's just my comment on that. But it's related to my next question, which is how has your work influenced urban planners, architects, city planners, and so on? Are they receptive to what you tell them? Are they interested?
A lot of them are, yes. So the idea now is to allow the residents to meet and greet and get together. Yeah. I don't much keep track of that, mainly because I've gotten quite lazy in my old age. But it's been widely received in Asia, in Northern Europe, and of course in the United States.
The people are taking notice and taking in what you've said and using it?
Yeah.
But in your mind, these outdoor places, do they qualify as third places?
Oh, sure. Yeah. You know, my 2 years in the south of France, it was basically all outdoors, unless the weather turned really nasty, as it would do in February. But
yeah, but in those places, people are sitting down on chairs and tables, right? So these things are just always walking, except maybe the odd person might sit at a bench for a while. It just seems maybe the idea is to think of it as a continuum rather than sort of more rigid way that I was thinking. I mean, if the tavern maybe is the epitome of a third place.
I would think of it, if I were you, in the broadest possible term, remembering two things. They have regulars, and conversation is the main thing. And that can occur in a great variety of places, unless it's prohibited by law.
Well, thank you very much, Ray.
You've just heard Professor Ray Oldenburg talking about his classic book, The Great Good Place. Cafes, coffee shops, community centers, beauty parlors, general stores, bars, and hangouts. Tidings from Hazel Kahn can be heard on the second Wednesday of every month at 7:30 p.m. and is archived at hazelkahn.com. Tidings is produced by Tony Ernst.